Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host today, Todd Wilson, regional president of PNC Bank.
Thank you, Josh. It's great to be here. Today, we have the pleasure of visiting with Candace Nelson, the powerhouse entrepreneur behind Sprinkles, the world's first cupcake bakery and first cupcake ATM. More recently, she launched Pizzana, a rapidly growing neo-Neapolitan pizzeria chain.
With her venture studio, Los Angeles-based CN2 Ventures, Candace invests in early-stage consumer companies. She also finds time to contribute to the Wall Street Journal, produce and star in hit TV shows, and raise two children with her husband, Charles. Candace Nelson, welcome to C-Speak.
Thank you for that lovely intro. I'm delighted to be here.
Candace, you are known for so many things, and you've had a remarkable career that we've had a chance to follow. Let's start with Sprinkles. What was that aha moment that eventually led to the launch of Sprinkles back in 2005?
I definitely had an aha moment, but let me take you back and give you a little context before I share that with you. So I was raised to follow a certain career path. My dad had been a corporate lawyer, so I thought I'd do something similar. Got out of college, went to an investment bank, then went to a technology company, and I was slowly sort of marching up the corporate ladder. And then two things happened. One was the tech bubble burst, so I was out of a job. And then the next thing that happened was 9/11. And that left me really searching for more meaning in my career and pretty much on the couch, unemployed, not knowing what to do. So I decided to go to pastry school. I wanted to follow my passion and do something that really brought me joy. And I was walking through the grocery store one day, passing these stacks of plastic clamshells with all of these sad cupcakes inside. And I thought to myself, gosh, the cupcake could really use a makeover. So I set about to reinvent the cupcake and to found Sprinkles Cupcakes, the world's first cupcake bakery.
Well, Candace, Los Angeles, the land of low carbs and no gluten, and you choose to open a cupcake bakery. Tell me a little more about that.
That's exactly the reaction I got, which was nobody in LA eats carbs. But for me, I really was looking at this with eyes wide open, and I didn't want to buy into the cliches and stereotypes that people have about LA. And when you drive around this town, there are a lot of burger places. There are a lot of donut shops. And so I thought, I bet if I were to elevate something that everybody already secretly loves, they would feel good about buying it again.
What point did you realize that this could be a national brand beyond just Los Angeles?
So the first day we opened our doors, I had no idea if anyone was going to show up because literally everyone around me had said they wouldn't. And so I was relieved that we had a line on day one. And that just built very organically. We had a great response from the community early on. And then even several months in, we started to get more national recognition from celebrities talking about us like Katie Holmes. And then the ultimate, Barbara Streisand sent our cupcakes to Oprah Winfrey and she featured us on our show. So that was 8 months in. And that's when we knew we had something.
Now, it sounded like this was a rocket ship from early on, but I'm sure you had your challenges. Talk about that first 6 months, that first year. What were the primary challenges you faced?
Operational challenges. We had absolutely no idea what we were doing. When I opened on day one, I was working with a KitchenAid mixer, something you would have in your home kitchen. My recipes were yielding 24. Well, people were coming in and buying 24 at a time. I didn't have any staff. I had no experience. I mean, my husband and I, we were young, naive, and passionate. And that really got us through a lot of these issues. Eventually, we were able to scale up and kind of get our operations in order. But it was a mess. It really was. And people were not happy because they had driven across town. They'd found parking in Beverly Hills. They showed up. And we had no cupcakes to sell them. Listen, it's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem. And we had to figure it out.
So at that point, you clearly figured it out because you went on to tremendous success and it became a national name. Everybody knows what Sprinkles is. How did you scale? What was the next step? What did you need to do?
Well, scaling a retail business is hard work, right? I mean, Charles and I, we were boots on the ground. We would show up at our new space. We would hire everyone. We would train everyone. It's all about the team. But I think one of the bigger challenges that people don't think about in our journey was just the competition, the rampant competition that came about right away, because we went from being this crazy idea, what do you mean you're going to sell upscale cupcakes in a cupcakes only shop, to all of a sudden lines out the door. And then there were cupcake shops popping up everywhere. So part of our challenge was really getting the word out there that we were the original and that we were special. And so really, we had to lean into our brand and make sure that our brand was known, you know, nationally and beyond.
Did you find yourself competing with the copycats at some point?
You know, what's interesting is, yes, of course, we were in competition. But when we first opened, there were so many people that didn't understand what we were doing that really when cupcake shops started opening in people's towns across the country, they started to get it. Like we would come into a new market and then people already understood cupcakes are trending, cupcakes are hot. And so we didn't have to do that education piece for people coming through the door anymore.
One of the things that you clearly did was innovate, continue to innovate, which I think historically people might have thought, how can you innovate cupcakes?
Mm-hmm.
But talk about this cupcake ATM.
Oh, sure.
And how that came about and how ultimately you rolled that out.
So that was really a reaction that came from all of the competition that we were facing. We really had to establish ourselves as the leaders in this space again. You know, my husband and I say we love to embrace the crazy ideas because what we did initially with Sprinkles was pretty crazy. And so when we were brainstorming, there's no idea too weird. So I was pregnant with my second son. We came home late from a party and I was craving a Sprinkles cupcake, which normally, not a big deal. I've got pretty good access to those. But I'd already eaten all the cupcakes in the house and Sprinkles was closed. So I was out of luck. And I was kind of grumbly. So I was pregnant. I was hormonal and I was kind of annoyed about it. So I was grumbling to my husband and he and I started brainstorming, like batting around these ideas. What if you could get a cupcake anytime, day or night? And most normal people probably would have gone to sleep and forgotten about it. But the next day, we woke up and started taking action on the idea. And when the cupcake ATM came to life, it really did capture people's imaginations on a national scale. I mean, we were on all the late night talk shows. People couldn't wrap their head around an ATM that dispenses cupcakes and not cash. And it really served to drive business again.
So for nearly 10 years, you grew the business, you grew the brand. You operated and lived, breathed in the world of cupcakes. And then, like so many entrepreneurs, you made a decision to sell the company. What was that transition like? Was that hard? Was it difficult? Was it something that kept you up at night wondering about what may happen to the brand?
Of course. This brand was my first child, essentially. I really did feel like I gave birth to it and I nurtured it and I cared for it as it grew. And so it was very much a part of who I was. Having said that, I now had two actual children of my own who were really little, and it was hard to be toting them around across the country to all these different openings. And so for personal reasons, I really felt like someone else would be a better steward for the brand. So we went through a process and we found a great private equity firm who specializes in retail and restaurants. But not to say I sailed off into the sunset, because it was really hard for me to separate. My identity was so intertwined with this business and this brand. So it definitely took a couple years of sort of unraveling a little bit who I was without Sprinkles. But I did get to drop my kids off at school and yes, do all of that great stuff.
So while you're going through this couple of year period that you mentioned of the transition, were you already thinking about your next business opportunity? Was it mostly just time off with the family or a little bit of both?
I think we were just physically and emotionally exhausted. I'm speaking to people who are executives and founders. You get it. Like, we were scaling a business across the country. It was highly competitive. There were so many highs and so many lows. So stepping away from the business, I really felt like I needed a break and I really wanted to pour into my family. So Charles kept on as the CEO for a couple years before making the official transition. I stepped away to spend time with my family. But of course, when you're an entrepreneur, you're always an entrepreneur and you want to just like dig into that next business idea again.
And that takes us into fast forwarding to 2017. You opened up Pizzana. And for those of us who've been there, who've experienced it, we all love it. My personal favorite is the Carnivora. It's delicious.
Meat lovers.
Yes, of course. How would you describe, for somebody who's not been to Pizzana, what's the experience like? What do you hear from your customers?
So this is Neapolitan pizza reimagined. And this is not your average pizza joint. This is eating the best food made from the best ingredients. And we're talking Michelin Bib Gourmand awarded pizza in a beautiful but unfussy environment. So the idea is that you can bring your family and nobody has to sacrifice. Your kids are comfortable. They're not sitting at a white tablecloth, but mom and dad can have a great meal, great salad, a great glass of wine, and everyone is happy.
So Candace, you've obviously done a great job launching Pizzana, but maybe take us a step back. You're taking your kids to school. You're enjoying life. Where did the brainchild for Pizzana come about?
Oh, well, I had no intention of going back into the food business, actually. I was at a friend's house. He had a chef from Naples, Italy, who was catering with his delicious pizzas. I took one bite and I thought, what is this? Because it was this incredible blend of traditional classic Neapolitan pizza in that it had the chew and the char and the character in the crust, but it was perfect for American taste because you could pick it up as a slice.
Right.
And classical Neapolitan pizza is much more soupy. You have to eat it with a fork and knife. And so it just was this perfect blending of cultures for me. And it was a flavor bomb. And I was obsessed. And so I sought out the chef. We ended up talking all night. And he happened to mention that he would love to start a restaurant one day. And I couldn't help myself. I said, let's do that. Because I could just see the vision. It came together in my mind. I could see myself building a brand around him, his founder story, and the product, which was so exceptional.
Taking the transition from a walk-in, you get a cupcake, you walk out, versus having families come in, sit down, need to be served. That must have been challenging.
So challenging. Really, Pizzana is so different than what we were doing with Sprinkles. You touched on it, length of service with the guest. Sprinkles was essentially people would place their orders in advance and they'd come and they'd pick up or they'd pick the cupcakes out of the case. Our length of service with the guest was about 5 minutes. And we made sure to put every bit of energy into that, you know, transaction and that engagement, and people left happy. Here, within 90 minutes sometimes is how long we're dealing with the guests. A lot can go right, but a lot can go wrong. It really comes down to training your front of house just as much as your back of house.
Well, I'll tell you, as a father of two girls, 11 and 15, I certainly appreciate the fact that you can walk in to a non-pretentious, it's a really nice atmosphere, but you feel comfortable as a parent bringing your children and you have amazing food. So thank you for creating that.
Thank you. My pleasure. And I get to benefit too. So it's not all, you know, selfless.
Also, as a customer myself, I know that you've taken this concept of innovation and used that in Pizzana as well. Talk a little bit about the takeaway and the concept that you revolutionized really during COVID.
So my husband and I are such details people. And I do think that was the foundation for Sprinkle success and for Pizzana's. So much so that sometimes we do things that people don't understand. Like for the first 6 to 9 months of our first Pizzana restaurant, we did not do takeout. A pizza restaurant, not doing delivery, not doing takeout, that's ridiculous. Even I will admit to that. But it's because we weren't sure how people were going to experience this beautiful pizza out of a cardboard box.
Right.
And so we went round and round, and we even went so far as to think, maybe we need to patent a new type of pizza box. And then we thought, well, that's going to take a while. We need to move on this a little sooner. So over COVID, we were forced into action, and we came up with this system called the heat and slice, where we par-bake your pizza. This is an option. Obviously, you can get your pizza sliced and ready to go. But if you choose heat and slice, we'll par bake your pizza. We won't cut it. We'll leave all of the fresh ingredients on the side. Mm-hmm. So when you get your pizza home, you can refresh it in your oven. You put the fresh ingredients on and you cut it up and it tastes almost like 99.5% of what you would get in the restaurant. And that really gave us comfort that people were experiencing it the right way.
That's excellent. You're giving the customer options.
That's right.
All right. So earlier you mentioned that the concept of moving into two completely different types of foods was not necessarily intentional, and it's not something that you anticipated. Are there any types of foods today that you think are just itching? They're ready for innovation. They're ready for something new, maybe even investment. What are your thoughts? Do you see anything?
So I'll say this. I think we're good on protein bars for a while. Let's just hold up on any more protein bars. I mean, it's so overwhelming when you go to the grocery store and look at that aisle. I think, and this isn't to be self-serving, maybe it is, but I think the frozen pizza aisle still could use a little innovation. I mean, those brands that are in there have been there since the 80s, at least. And in terms of investment, I think I'm really interested in hydration and gut health. And I can't believe no one has really nailed the hangover helper yet. Like, why isn't there a brand that everyone knows and loves that you just pop a whatever and take it down the next day and you feel great?
Well, think of the billions that are to be made when that does happen.
Thank you. And if anyone has that idea, come to me, please.
Fair enough. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you had to pick, you could have only one food for the rest of your life, and it could only be cupcakes or pizza. Which one would it be?
I'd have to say pizza, just because pizza is more of a whole food and it's a vessel for whatever you want. I mean, you go carnivoro, I like to actually put salad on my pizza when I eat it. So I could see eating pizza every meal. And I do several times a week, actually.
And theoretically, you can make a sweet pizza too.
Oh, absolutely. Chocolate pizza, for sure.
So Candace, you've obviously talked about the tremendous success you've had in the early stages with Pizzana. And earlier you talked about scaling related to Sprinkles. You now have 7 units in multiple states with Pizzana. How big can this get? Where can this go? How are you going to scale Pizzana?
Well, do you think anyone's getting sick of good pizza anytime soon?
I don't.
Not me.
Absolutely.
I don't think so. I love working with foods that aren't necessarily new to our tastes here in America. Foods that people already love, but reinventing them so people love them even more. And you're right, we have 5 locations around LA. So wherever you are in the LA area, you can pretty much get your hands on a Pizzana pie. And we have 2 now in Texas, and we continue to expand. We got Nation's Restaurant News's hot concept last year, and we're really on a tear and considering franchising.
Obviously, with Sprinkles, you ultimately sold the private equity. Have you thought about taking an investment from private equity for the Pizzana concept?
Absolutely. We'd be open to that. We've proven the concept has legs outside of the Southern California market, and we would be open to it.
So Candace, we've heard about your journey as a multiple-time entrepreneur, one of which is obviously still in process, but talk a little bit about yours and Charles's transition to investors.
So we have a family office / venture studio hybrid called CN2 Ventures, where we're investing in consumer brands and retail concepts. And we have varying degrees of sort of hands-on, depending on the venture. Obviously, with Pizzana, we're very hands-on. Some of the others, less so, but always there to give advice and to guide and to help our founders network.
Candace, I'd also like to congratulate you on you joining the Sharks on the hit ABC TV show Shark Tank.
Thank you.
What's that experience been like for you?
Oh my gosh, it was such a blast. It was really quite surreal, actually, because I've watched the show forever. I watch it with my family. My boys love it. And so to be on that set and to look to my right and see Mark Cuban and to look to my left and have Mr. Wonderful and all those lights. And then the one thing that I think people don't fully understand, I didn't even fully understand it, is that the show is so real. You have no idea who's coming through those doors before they do, and you're working with your own money, and you're fighting against other investors who want to put their money in, and all while the clock is ticking down. I mean, it's just high pressure, high stakes, but so exciting. And I'm thrilled with the companies I walked away with. One is Gently Soap, botanical soap for sensitive skin sufferers. And the other is Flouse, which is an electronic flosser.
And what we see on the TV is a condensed version. I mean, you guys are in there for a long time hearing longer pitches, correct?
That's right. Yeah, they edit the pitches down from about 45 minutes. Sometimes they go even longer than that, though, to 5 or just over 5, what you'll see on the show.
Should we expect to see you on in the future?
Potentially.
All right.
I know I'll probably be involved in an update of one of my companies. And yes, it might be a recurring guest shark.
All right. So you're talking about investments. And like so many other very successful entrepreneurs and CEOs, there's a focus and an investment on people.
Mm.
That's so important today. The people make our company. They make our brands. They make up our image and our success. What type of people inspire you to want to invest in them?
I find when I'm hearing a founder speak and you can just feel their like excitement and their passion about their idea. And a lot of times it comes from sort of a personal challenge. Their founder story is moving in some way. That's when I know that they're going to be able to get investors on board. They're going to be able to get partners and suppliers and customers as well. When I met Daniele Uditi, who is our now chef and partner at Pizzana, I was so taken with his story. He had come to the United States from Naples, Italy, with $200 in his pocket and his grandmother's like starter for making pizza dough. That's all he had. And for a period of time, he was living in a van on Venice Beach, showering in the public showers, and just making a living with this craft. And he was such an artist, and he was so passionate about this craft. And I just felt like, wow, I want to share this story with the world, and I want to share his pizza with the world, too.
What an amazing story, from public showers in Venice Beach to running what's going to be the next pizza empire.
Yes, he's been amazing. And actually, I produced a show that he starred on Hulu called Best in Dough, where he was a pizza judge. So it's been really fun to see him follow in my judge footsteps on a food show. So I want someone who is really resilient and passionate about their idea, because the challenges that are thrown at you as an entrepreneur are unlike anything.
Right.
And you need to be ready to take your tumbles and then dust yourself off and get back up and keep executing against your vision. So the passion piece is huge.
Are there particular business segments or industries that you're finding yourself wanting to learn more about, to potentially invest in? You mentioned earlier gut health.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned hydration. Outside of that, are there others that you're looking at or are you open to?
Sure. I love the beauty industry. I think in particular, I'm really interested in scalp health and hair growth right now. And I've been loving my journey with Kristen Dunning of Gently Soap, sort of learning about eczema sufferers and those with sensitive skin and how her soaps are really helping to heal people who thought they could only use clinical soap in the past.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing a potential update on Shark Tank and perhaps in the news.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about Candace, the brand, because so much of what you've said has to do with your passions, the same things you look for from entrepreneurs. The Candace Nelson name is a respected brand all in itself. How has that become part of your strategy moving forward in your business? Or has it, maybe I should ask?
Well, I actually initially fell into my personal brand quite accidentally. It was when the Food Network came calling. They needed the Queen of Cupcakes for a judge on their new show, Cupcake Wars. And that show ended up going for 10 years. And every time that show came into people's living rooms, they saw Candace Nelson, founder of Sprinkles Cupcakes, the world's first cupcake bakery. And that was so important in terms of securing our brand awareness across the country and internationally. The show ended up being syndicated around the world.
We all love Cupcake Wars, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Yes,
and the kids do as well.
Thank
yes.
you. Yeah, the kids really love that show. And then I ended up doing and producing Sugar Rush, which was on Netflix as well, which cupcakes were one of the rounds, and then there were cakes and pastries as well. So it wasn't just cupcakes. But that was accidental, but I realized in that process how important it was to show up as the face of my brand.
Mm-hmm.
And how people really buy into people more than they do, you know, a product. And I think that that's something that I really encourage other founders and executives to do, because your personal brand is something that is portable. So when I sold Sprinkles, I was able to take the power of Candace Nelson over to Pizzana and use that, as opposed to just having stood behind the brand Sprinkles and then having to start over.
Do you expect to see more ventures kind of highlighting Candace the brand, whether it's TV shows, books in the future?
I don't want people to get sick of me. I did come out with a book a couple of years ago.
A New York Times best-selling book, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It wasn't just about cupcakes and recipes. You also talked a lot about, in your second book, about entrepreneurship.
That's right.
So talk about some of the secret recipes to success in entrepreneurship and kind of what you've learned.
Well, I was inspired to write Sweet Success because I made so many mistakes as a first-time entrepreneur, and I really wanted to help people avoid some of the mistakes that I made, and also just pave a way for the next generation of entrepreneurs. Listen, entrepreneurs are the new rock stars. They're very glamorized, but it's typically a specific type of entrepreneur that's glamorized. Somebody in technology, maybe men that are building rocket ships to the moon. I don't know. But I built a big business out of something really simple, essentially, that a child could make. And so I wanted to help democratize this idea of entrepreneurship and say, if I could do it, you can too.
Let me ask you this. So the book's title is Sweet Success, A Simple Recipe to Turn Passion into Profit. Is there something that you hear from either those who've read it or from other business leaders that really resonated with them as your secret to success?
Yes, I really go into the idea of branding and differentiating yourself in a crowded market, which I think is more important than ever today, because it's never been easier to start a business. But because of that, it's never been harder to stand out.
Right.
And I get a lot of pitches where I'm just like, this sounds great, but what? Why do I care? Like, what is the differentiator here? Like, what is going to be memorable about this product and this brand? And I've heard from small business owners that have said they've used that chapter of marketing to revamp their entire brand and educate their marketing department, which is incredible praise. And I had no idea people would be doing that with the book. But I think more than anything, people just are very inspired by it.
Well, congratulations on that success. I personally, and I know Todd probably feels the same way, I could join you all day and listen to these stories. I do have one more question for you.
Sure.
We have a recurring feature at the Los Angeles Business Journal. It's called My Biggest Mistake. Mm. And it's really one of our most read columns because I think it allows our readers and other executives to connect with CEOs on a different level. There's a vulnerability there. So I'm going to ask you, looking back over your career, was there one biggest mistake that you made that you can look at, or maybe one or two that you can look back on today that really influenced you? And also, how did it ultimately shape your future decisions?
So I would say early on, I thought entrepreneurship was a one-man show, one-woman show. I didn't understand that it takes a village and that, you know, entrepreneurship is meant to be lonely. You're taking on the world. You're disrupting with new ideas. Of course, it's going to feel lonely. And to be fair, there weren't as many communities and networks set up, particularly for women founders at the time. So I felt very lonely a lot of the time. I mean, obviously, I had my husband, who was incredible support and partner in all of this at home and at work. But I didn't have any other women in my life who I could just pick up the phone and they would get it.
Right.
And so I really slept on building a network. I should have been more proactive about that. I just thought that loneliness was normal. And I think today there are so many more resources for women in terms of communities they can join. But also, even if you don't want to join a community, you can build your own. Reach out to people that you respect. Get together with friends who are dealing with similar issues once a month, go have lunch and toss ideas around and share resources. I just really am a huge believer in building that network because it doesn't have to be so lonely.
Was there someone, as you kind of look back at the last, I guess, 20 years now of your entrepreneurship career, did you have a mentor? Did you have someone that you spoke to that you could talk to ask those tough questions?
Honestly, it was my husband. And he loves to play that role. So I'm lucky. He gives great advice. We used to joke that he should have his own podcast called The Advice Guy, because even when you don't want his advice, he's got some advice for you. But yeah, he's been my rock.
So reach out to others, look for help, mentors, look for community.
That's right.
Wonderful. Well, Candace, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been inspirational. I'll tell you, we're all looking forward to see what's next.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been fun to share and hear your stories. Really glad you came to join us today.
Such an honor. LA has been such an incredible, supportive community for all of my ventures. It's such an amazing place to be an entrepreneur, and so happy to sit and share my stories with you today.
Thanks again, Candace. On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you for listening. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.